Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve.
Jay Bird. It's cold outside.
It's cold outside everywhere.
Yeah, not everywhere. I'm done. I'm down here kicking ass and taking names, son. So.
What is it, like 70 down there today?
No,
rub it in.
Not at all. It's not like that.
Gotcha.
It's 40s, 50s. Fishing's really good, all that fun stuff, but it's good.
Oh, that's cool.
But anyway, guys, just so you know, big announcement. We're definitely doing the Muskie Shop Bash again this year. Yay!
Woo!
So, it is July 16th, Minocqua, Wisconsin. We'll be plugging this till the end of time, until July. So, we've got a bunch of cool speakers lined up. Obviously, yours truly will be there again, and we're going to have some special announcements as we get closer to the thing, and definitely over the course of the winter, we'll be announcing more people. But all the usual suspects will be there. You know, old Pete Maina, old Joe Booker, all those guys. But we're going to mix it up. We're going to have more vendors. We're actually working on some Muskie Shop Bash custom collars from some of our vendors. You guys like some of them show collars, right? Ooh, show collars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, let me say this, though, Jay.
Yeah.
Because the Muskie shows have been going on. If show collars were so good, wouldn't they make them all year long? Anyway, so.
Exactly.
But, you know, whatever.
Right.
But if they were so good, wouldn't they? Huh? Anyway, let's not crawl down that rabbit hole. But got that going on, but I've got something super exciting waiting in the wings.
Super exciting?
So super.
Lay it on me.
Okay, so obviously the bash, we're going to have seminars. We're going to have similar to what we did this past summer, and it was a huge success. Tons of people came out, and that was a lot of fun. Me and Jay attempted to try to take as many people we could out on the Steve Paul low Muskie special deal out on the boat the next day. And there were so many people to ask. It was overload, and it was such like, and I felt bad, and I was taking people for like 10, 15 minutes at a time. And we thought about it, and like, what do we do? How do we get it where we can spend more time with the people? We can figure out how to fish. We can do this. We can do that. Make it a fun event. And so we are pleased to announce the next day, it is going to be brought to you by the Muskie Shop and the folks at Livingston Lures is a free Muskie school.
Mm-hmm.
So on July 17th, if you come to the bash, you don't have to come to the bash, but we're going to do it the next day. So if you go to the bash and you buy some of those cool show collars, Jay, get yourself a show collar. Do you know why? If they were so good, they would sell them year round.
July 16th, by the way.
Well, that's what I'm saying. July 16th. On the 17th, free Muskie school. So I can tell you right now, the people that will be, and I'm talking one-on-one instruction, I'm going to be there. You're going to be able to hang out with me. You're going to be able to hang out with Mr. Pete Maina in the flesh, one-on-one. And most likely Herb Beck, as long as everything's going smooth. We don't know about what he's doing for Canada, but it'll be three of us. So right now we're looking at probably me, Pete, and Steve. So Steve, and Pete, or possibly we might interject somebody else. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do one-on-one stuff. So figuring out some of the logistics of how we're going to do it. We'll definitely do like a not clinical, but like a class setting. Like, okay, let's go through this. Let's go through some structure. Let's go through some of this, some of that, some of this. But we're going to spend that time for those one-on-one questions with myself, truly. Jay Bird will be hanging out there, too. And then you're going to have access to Pete where we can spend some time and really help guys work out any kinks or questions you got and sort of take a real deep dive there one-on-one. And I'm really excited about that. And guess how much it costs, Jay?
Free. Yeah, I was going to ask you, how much does it cost?
Free.
Oh, it must be free today. Are you kidding me? No charge?
Free.
Who's ever done that before?
Well, to me, dude, okay.
It's awesome.
I'll say this, is that, man, everybody in the Muskie game's always dying for information. You need, you know, not everybody gets spent every day on the water. Not everybody has 30 years under their belt or 40 years or whatever. man, stop the gatekeeping. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, sure. You guys, I'm preaching to the choir. You guys listen to the podcast. You know, I mean, it's just like, if I have an answer, I'll tell you. Or if I don't know an answer, I'll try to get it for you. And I'm going to try my best. And let's share as much information as we can. And you know, try to have a cool setup here where everybody's learning and doing all this stuff. So anyway, what I'd like you guys to do is, so I can get a gauge of how many people we're dealing with, is if you want to come to the Muskie School, shoot us an email at the app and just say, hey, I want to go to the Muskie School. And that'll at least let me to gauge, you know, how many people are planning for it. Then we'll figure out maybe like some kind of, I don't want to do like a registration thing. You don't have to do anything, but like a sign up or something. So we know like, hey, we've got 10 people or we have 100 people.
Right. You know, yeah, we're just trying to plan. Yeah.
Right. So we know
there's a lot of
donuts.
Logistical things we got to put together here for this 2-day event now. Yeah.
We don't want 100 people and 10 donuts. I mean, dude, when we did the bash.
Yeah, right.
When we did the bash this summer, I was like, I hope like 50 people show up, and there were like damn near 600 if you counted them in and out. All that. I mean, it was as good as any show, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it was great.
It was great, and we loved hanging out with everybody. It was a really chill vibe. But like I said, in that setting, it's cool to come out and check out Bates, and the cool thing, hey, you get to meet Joe Booker, you get to do this, you get to do that, or you know, and hang out. But I really want to be able to spend some time with some podcasters. And anybody that wants to come out and really just spend that hands-on time where it's just like, okay, what do you need help with? What can I help you with? Because I know I'm going to learn something. You know, somebody's going to say, well, this is what I do at home. And I'm going to go, damn, that's a great idea. You know, and we have a conversation and sort of expound on some of these ideas and like having Pete there and all that stuff. You know, we can dig in
it's like muskie fishermen probably aren't well known for divulging full information.
Muskie,
you know what
fishermen
I mean?
It's all
about holding back and only giving a little, you know, in terms of secrets and tactics and spots, dude, and all that. The opposite with this. It's full open disclosure.
The boomer way of doing stuff, right? The boomer way of doing stuff is as follows. I'm going to give you enough information to sell you a bait. That's it.
Mm.
You know, at the podcast at this point, that's not how we roll. So I want to have a muskie school. It's not like, hey, come to the muskie school and you get a free subscription to something, you know, or whatever. Let's have a good time. If you guys have interest in it, or if you're like, man, I don't want to do that, then don't come. But you know, if you guys want to roll up to the free muskie school there on the 17th, July 17th, let me know. And like I said, obviously it's sponsored. Livingston's going to sponsor it. Muskie Shop's going to help out and all that stuff. But we're going to make it about just trying to cover as much ground as we can and just helping as many people as they can, because that's the mission. So I'm excited, super excited about that. Jay, on a scale of 1 to 13, how excited are you?
Well, I don't do that. I don't play that game, Steve. You know me. You know,
you can't
go more than 100%. I'm going to give it a 10.
Jay's going hard in the paint, folks.
Oh man, it's gonna be twice as good as last year, if that's even possible.
I will start. We're gonna hold off on the stupid. We're gonna hold off on the stupid commercials, the Elmer Jensen's bass-a-thons here for a minute. But I'll tell you what, come April and May, you guys are screwed, because it's just makes so many jokes.
Yeah, we get DJ Tommy Fresh, you know, DJ in the event again. You know, that's my dream right there personally, because I think that was the funniest thing ever.
You get that, and then you know.
Hello, Monaco.
Right, you get Pete Maina's. Pete Maina will be hosting the Muskie School by day, and then by evening he'll be doing UFO sightings. So join us for the Muskie School. Stick around for Pete Maina's Bigfoot hunt. Maina scours the North Woods for the elusive Sasquatch. Yeah.
Steve, we got some Sasquatch sightings over in Sawyer County, Hayward area here. I don't know if I can make the bash.
We've got reports of scat over by Leech Lake. Sasquatch scat.
Dex is on it right now.
Dex is... Tex can tell the difference by taste. If that's a squatch or a deer. 100% squatch. Anyway.
Oh, I love Pete.
So, moving forward in a productive manner. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk structure again. And I'm just going to crawl down the rabbit hole here, folks. It is just, it is due time just because so many people have loved the previous structure podcast. We're going to crawl down the rabbit hole on some different stuff. So, let's say you haven't listened to the original structure podcast. I'm probably going to say some of the same stuff again. But if you haven't listened to it, pick it up because I'm going to try to just get a little bit deeper on this. We're going to get a little bit deeper and a little bit more defined. Instead of defining what good structure is, let's talk about how to fish it and what to do in and around it, identifying what's good versus bad when everything looks good, and crawl down the rabbit hole a little bit deeper. So if you're new to structure fishing, visit that, scroll back. It's some episodes back there. It's called Structure Fishing. But
yeah, I think it was back in October.
Yeah. Here, folks, for those listening, let me tell you. I'll tell you exactly. So this is for the folks at home that are listening and you're going, I have not listened to the first one and I need to listen to it. Let me tell you the episode number here. Right?
Okay.
Episode 104.
104.
So if you're scrolling back through episodes on the app or... It's things everywhere. We got a freaking every podcast format. But it's episode 104. So if you need to hit the primer on that, let's go. Jumping right in. So I think on the last one, which I haven't listened to it because I hate the sound of my own voice. You know, we covered nice. We covered all of basically some of these major things, right? How to find this. What is that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go through those major points of what I'm looking for and whether it be north, south, wherever we're going, on how to identify some of these better pieces of structure and how to capitalize on it, like I just said. So right off the rip, you know, I'm looking at some notes here, right? Let's just start with a point, right? Now, you can have a point that's coming out into the lake or a bar. Sort of interchangeable. A lot of, you know what I'm saying? People say, well, there's a bar, there's a point. What's really the difference? I think of a point a lot more. I'll call it a point if they're like, say it's a slope off of the bank, right? So there's a tapering angle, you know, triangulation of the shorelines coming out. And usually that's going to extend subsurface, right? So you got I want to say point because a point's a point, but you got a finger, you got something sticking off the shoreline and it's going to continue out. Right. So we'll refer to a point as something that has shoreline reference and a bar. I know they're interchangeable, but if I'm thinking about a bar as by definition, you're not really going to see it on the shoreline as much as it just a subsurface feature. Right.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Relatively interchangeable in the way that I'm going to fish those. And you go, what makes a point / bar? What makes it good? Right? If you look at a map and you look at a map of a lot of lakes, there's going to be those points. There's going to be these irregularities in the shoreline where it comes out into the lake a little bit more. Right? What makes a good one? What makes a bad one? In general, I'm looking for steepness in that, right? So when that point comes out, I want it to have steep drop-off. So let's say I'm running the typical shoreline. If you imagine in your head, there's a shoreline and it's very regular. It's 5 foot deep, right? It's going, there's the basic transition on that first break, right? Our first contact point, like we've talked about in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
From that first contact point to the shoreline, pretty regular, 5, 6, 7, 5, 6, 7. You know, there's some motion in it, but it's nothing dramatic. A point that's going to stand out to me that's going to be dramatic. It's going to come from 5 to nothing, and it's going to run like a ridge, and it's going to come out and then drop off past that contact point, past that first break. Okay? So I want it to be a road sign that's pointing from shallow to deep in an aggressive manner. Right? Now you get into that situation, say on like a bowl shape or a standardized lake in the Northwoods, right? There's going to be some kind of point. If you remember on I can't say the name of the lake, but we'll call it Pony Leg. Jay, does that pony okay. leg horse parts? Pony we're leg. Thinking about horse parts here. Think of horse.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
There was a protruding point, if you remember that, next to a bay, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a cup bay, and there's one point on the whole lake. One point. It came out. It dropped off into deep water. Now there is cover in the form of weeds in conjunction with that point.
Yep.
But 15 feet to the left, 15 feet to the right of that point were dead zones. But right on that point during prime feeding times, that was money for big fish.
Yep.
Okay.
It was.
With that being said, down that lake of Pony Leg, we'll call it, is there was a shallow area, right? Which is your typical. Sorry about the beep. There's a typical zone of what we would call a nursery, right? That's your baby fish zone. And they're not all small. We move some big fish in there. But, you know, that standard littoral zone, this very regular shallow flat, right? Mm-hmm. That shallow flat that was very regular provided the muskies, in my opinion, on that body of water, more of a refuge, a weedy refuge that was very regular. Now, they were eating in there, but they were not eating to the same degree that they were eating on that point.
Yeah, right.
The difference in reaction and action on that point versus this bay, and this lake's very small. So here's the one major bay. Here's the one point on the lake. The difference between how they were feeding in that bay, that classic weedy, musky-looking bay, to how they're feeding on that one major point were night and day. We could get follows in the bay, and we're talking, we fish this multiple times. You get your follows in the bay, and you get your big fish on the point, right? And so how important that can be when we're breaking away from like a midsummer pattern where you go, I'm fishing weed edge. I'm on the littoral zone. I'm fishing that weed edge. A lot of times your points and your structural elements are getting overlooked because you're having action on that, but you're going to find serious predation happening on those structural elements, especially like a point. So on that lake, it's easy to sort of ascertain where's the major feeding point, right? So on Pony Leg, we've got that one point. We've got other weed areas. We work some gravel. We work some spawning areas like those man-made spawning beds where they dump gravel in, all this stuff. Yeah. They've sort of paled in comparison to the point, as I said. But that was easy. Let's go to a body where we have a bunch of points, right? So we get away from the man-made, a Wisconsin natural lake where it has a couple features to a man-made reservoir where it's been flooded, and we might have tons of points. We might have subsurface points. We might have points that were once mountainous. They're, you know what I'm saying? There's all kinds of stuff that's added into right. that mix.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at like bodies of water that I deal with where there are hundreds of points, all of them in varying degrees, right? How do you ascertain where that's where you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
Back to what we've talked about highways, right? I'm going to look at a point and determine its merit, right? Because at the end of the day, musky fishing is about knowing where the fish are and then finding out what they'll eat, right? So we got to know where they're at first. So I've got 25 points in my vicinity, and I'm looking at my map, and I'm paying attention to my map, and I go, all right, I know I'm going to fish shallow zones. I know I'm going to fish the littoral zone. I'm going to fish whatever cover's available, but I'm going to be checking points to sort of expand my fishing horizons and get into this structure thing or be a better, well-rounded angler. I'm faced with 25 points. How on earth do I pick the right one? First off, we're going to start off with what I said, the irregularity. That's going to make a point better. So is it dramatic, right? If it just comes out, it's a little bump. Right. You got a dramatic shoreline, but there's not a lot of change subsurface. You know, muskies might use it, but it's not going to be the one. Right.
Sure.
So we're going to eliminate some of our things there. You know, it's not dramatic. There's not a lot of contouring on there, right? Okay. We might have a point and it doesn't break into deeper water. That's a huge factor. A good point is going to break out into a channel, or it's going to break out into deeper water in a dramatic fashion, right? We've talked about these highways, these transitional highways, where muskies are going to go, how they're going to get there, you know, right? How are they going to have some kind of spatial awareness? We need to follow the highways to like all these structural elements, right? This big point is going to be an irregularity. So if it's got, you know, good depth to it, and I mean good change, right? It's dramatic. And it extends out to the deepest area in my lake. So if it's adjacent to a 20-foot basin, and this sucker comes out, and the last break line on it's 15 feet, we're in the money, right? That is a major. That is a flashing light on the horizon saying, fish me. I am here, okay? Yep. So deep water in conjunction. So we want to break into deep water in conjunction with interests, features, right? Sharper breaks, stuff going on there, right? It's a sharper thing. So deep, sharp, cover, right? If I can find those three things, I will find a muskie on a point, okay? I don't have to have cover. It's not a necessity, but in the hierarchy of things, giving him ambush cover, it's going to be even better, okay? So if I got the cover on it, now, another factor I'm going to look at where I go, wow, this makes this point even juicier. Right? And by cover, it could be weed, it could be rock, it could be timber, it could be anything. Whatever you got subsurface, man-made structure, whatever, or man-made cribs, anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in that hierarchy of what makes one of these better, if we're trying to differentiate all these availability, is another factor could be playing, especially in a reservoir situation or things that have tributaries. You know, which direction that current's going. If you have a point that's coming out, it breaks into deep water. It has good depth to it. It has good structural change on the point itself. And it's got cover present. Then we have current passing by that. Bing, 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 bing. Right? Whether it's minimum, nothing current. Like, okay, there's a creek on the north. And here's the original creek channel. Look at your maps and be looking for original creek channels, by the way. Okay. And you sort of put these things together, these elements together, you've got a dynamite situation. So if you're looking at a bunch of points on a man-made body of water, start going pros and cons of all of them on your map. Okay. Is it a dramatic break? How big is it in relation to the surrounding lake? So, you know, if we got a small lake and a small point, that's the biggest point on the lake. If we got a giant 50-mile-long reservoir, what are the major points that come into this thing, right? What are the biggest ones? What are the biggest bars, the biggest points? How do they relate to the other ones? So how do they relate to deep water? How do they relate to current? Is there cover present? Make a hierarchy chart. You know, mark your, in way I mark maps all the time, I'll identify a feature with, say, we'll do like different color. I usually use dry erase markers. I'm just trying to sort something out. But, you know, I'll mark all the points coming out and something with a red marker, right? And sort of A, B, C, D them, right? I got A, B, C, D, G, whatever. I came in alphabet today, Jay, because I'm stupid. But we've got the alphabet.
You're grading A, B, C, D?
That's what I'm getting at. So, okay. No, I'm not grading them with that. I'll assign a...
You're assigning them. Okay, gotcha.
Assign a letter. I'm not sitting here naming them Herbert's Point. I don't care what the map says. Come up with a hierarchy of the structure and go, all right, I've got whatever body of water. I've got A through freaking M.
Mm-hmm.
These are my points. I'm going to grade them based upon what's there. Now, you might not know if there's cover present, but you know everything else, relation to deep water, relative size, right? Structural, like grading the structure. Is there a lot of contouring on that? I've already said where the squiggly lines come together will tell you it's sharper, right? Is it really spread out? Grade each one and give them a numerical value, 1 through 4, right? That's a 1, that's a 4. That's a 1, that's a 4. That's a 2. Now you know where to go to add that. So you let's say you got 10 to work with. We got a mid-sized lake. We got 10 points on this thing, right? A varying size. And I sort of break them down, and I spend a little bit of time studying each one of them, looking at what's around them, the surrounding structure, what could influence them. You know, are there current areas? Is it right down the lake from a neck down? You know, look what's around that thing in a side at a musky grade. That's a 4-star point, right? Now, you know, I've got another one across the thing, and it's just up on the littoral zone. And you've fished this lake before, and there's no weed there or whatever. You've been back in that thing, but you've not fished the point because I've never seen a fish back here. And, you know, there's not a lot of cover, and, you know, that's where they launch boats and, you know, whatever. That's going to be a 1, right? If you grade all the points on your lake, 1 through 4, and you go out and you fish all your top grade points, you've got some new spots, right? And the same thing, I, you know, jumping ahead here, but that's what I do with humps as well, right? Look at the humps on a lake. If you got humps, there's irregularities, you know, it could be a reef. Some of your northern lakes will have a reef, but other lakes are just going to have a hump. It's got this high spot that comes off the bottom. It could be rock. It could be soft bottom. It could be a litany of things. But mark them. You might have less humps. You got 5 humps, but you go, all right, that hump is it's in 60 feet of water and, you know, this, that, and the other, and it doesn't come up really high. It only comes off the bottom. You know, the top of that hump is this. And I'll get into some of the points, but grade these things. Assign a value. So you're not haphazardly running about, right? And so to grade that structure, you at least have a game plan. You have a strategic plan of attack, and you have what your gut is telling you is better than the other, instead of going, oh my goodness, there's too many, right? So if let's say you get that back to the premise that we've got 4 on our body, or excuse me, 10 things, and we got 4 4 stars, right? Mm-hmm. You can quickly integrate those into your passes or 2 of them, whatever's close to you, and start paying attention to that. Maybe they're great, maybe they're not, but we just had a starting point, and you're going in with a little bit more confidence, a little bit more mental fortitude because you've done your homework, right? You've done that map work, and you've graded these spots, and we've got something to work with. Obviously, if we're moving fish, the presence of bait fish on these points is going to, you know, what happens when the rubber meets the road will determine their value. But by doing that work, and that's what I do. I mean, I've sat down with Joe Booker one-on-one and done map study before we fish. This is what we do, right? What's good with this spot? What's going on? 9 times out of 10, you're right. You know, if you really dig into it, and instead of going, there's a point there, look at it. One thing I'll say is this, is understanding on say a reservoir or things that do have inlets, maybe there's a river coming out of a lake, or there's a stream at the top and a stream at the bottom. You know, knowing which way that stuff's going and how to approach is going to be a big deal. So get a feel for any current present. You know, also too, you go, which way's the wind blowing and all that stuff the day you're heading out there, but grading those spots. So, you know, with those points, and this is to answer and summarize a lot of questions we've got, which is an overarching structural statement, is how to fish them, right? How do you fish a point? You know, anybody can look on a map. Here's this big finger bar point sticking out in the lake, right? What do I do? Number one, I can tell you is this. You're going to have to get comfortable about getting away from the shoreline, okay? If that's not something you're doing yet, just start backing it off, right? So the way I'm going to fish a point, and just for argument's sake, current is non-existent or so minimal that it really is not influencing boat control, nor am I dealing with wind. I'm dealing with just a nice average day where boat control is perfect, right? Mm-hmm. The way I'm going to start on this thing is going to determine are going to be determined by time of day. Okay? And you go, what would influence that? Referring to what we talked about on the first structure podcast, being that I fully believe that muskies make daily movements from the deep water refuge to the shallow feeding zones multiple times a day.
Right, right.
Okay? I feel so strongly about that that it is practically ingrained in stone in my brain.
We totally agree.
So I'm coming into a point, and for example, imagine if you will, we got the shoreline, which is 0 feet, and this thing comes out. It breaks off completely at 15 feet, so it's the point's coming from zero. The end of the point is at 15 feet, and it terminates into the main basin, and the main basin of this lake is 20 feet, right? If I hit that thing in the morning, I'm going to go right at the shoreline, and I'm going to throw at the edge of this thing, right? I'm going to work my way out. It's the same thing you've heard me say about, well, they're either shallow, mid, or deep. The assumption would be in the early morning hours, if weather is stable and it's good musky conditions, they're going to be shallow. So start on that point shallow. The way I like to do it, depending on the size of the point, and I mean the width of the point, right? I like to get just off kilter from it, and I liked working it from dead up the center of it. Okay. Now, if it's one of those points where it's really, really shallow, not so much, but I'll get right on top of it. So I'm fan casting all the way across to this thing. Now, if it's really wide, you might have to do this in segments or sections. But, you know, standard what I'm seeing in my head and what a lot of people envision as a point or a board, you can get if you bomb cast left and right, you'll be able to cover it. So I'm going to start that shallow and work backwards. I'm going to work out from it, right? That's going to be the morning routine because I'm assuming that the fish are shallow in their daily migrations.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm hitting that thing in the middle of the day, I might just park my boat. And like I said, it's going from 0 to 15. I might park my boat at 10 and throw it to the deep stuff first. To adhere to what I believe, which is that they're deep during midday more so than not, or the active feeding fish are there, they're making moves up and down structure. Start middle of that thing. Start with the deep stuff and work your way back in, right? Obviously, that can be highly influenced by what you've seen throughout the course of the day. If you caught a fish and he was about 8 feet deep, you better start there and start at 10, start at 15 and start throwing into 8, 7, 6, right? But if you have no information, you don't have any patterning done, you have no fishing done, mornings, evenings, be in tight, work your way out, right? Middle of the day, work your way in from the depth in, okay? I feel like you're going to contact more of those fish in the midday by focusing more on the deeper elements of that thing. This parlays into a question that's been emailed a bunch of times about fishing structure and crankbaits, right? And probably an overarching question has been, what crankbaits or how do you fish them or what bait is going to get it done? Right? Everybody's looking for the magic bullet. Here's the silver bullet, right?
Yep.
You need multiples. Right? So if I'm fishing the structure on this bar we're all thinking about, 0 to 15 feet, the bar terminates into 20 feet of water. If I start my morning pass, it might start with a shallow raider. And as I work a little bit further out, right? My boat's now sitting in 10, and I don't have a lot of weed to deal with, but I need to get down there. I might start with a shallow raider, then quickly go to a bait that I love, which is the Big Fork Avatar, right? Runs that 6 zone pretty good. I'm going to rip it, and it's going to make contact. It's going to come up. And then 7, 8, 9, 10 casts later, I might be reaching for that, and I love the freaking bait more so than anything is that Livingston Lures Pounder you've heard me talk about that runs true and deep the whole time to fish the deeper end of that. So it's not about the right bait for the entire spot. Okay. So if I know that muskies are holding tight to structure, cold front, ring a bell, knock, 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 right? They're tight. They're tight to cover. They're tight to structure. Then I need baits that are going to run tight to cover and structure as I move off that bar, because I think that's probably one of the biggest missed opportunities that most anglers, they're just overlooking, is, you know, let's say we've identified the structure, and I have moved a muskie on that, and I'm moving out or down from the structure, and there's a bit of a change, right? You're going to move a fish, and you're going to stay on that bait, opposed to adapting to the spot, right? So I don't want to change, you know, I don't want to make some crazy change from a 5-inch bait to a 15-inch bait, but, you know, sixes, fives, get them down where you need them to be without making crazy changes. But I've been known to pattern colors and go, and I'm not a big color guy, but, you know, sometimes that happens and you go, okay, here's the colors I want to be doing. I might have three baits from three manufacturers, but they all have different running depths. And so as I'm backing off of this structure, I'm backing off of this point, I'm making three changes to make sure I'm effectively fishing that. Because I don't believe that, and again, the premise of fish that are holding structurally tight, a la cold front, the shallow rider might catch you one on that short, that shallow end of things. But when I've got that boat backed out all the way to the 20-foot zone, I'm throwing the very end of that point. It's not effective to throw the shallow rider. So if I got a fish that's holding on the very bottom of that point that's super negative or super neutral, I'm doing myself little to no good by throwing a bait that's 13 feet above his head. But if I throw a Livingston Lures Pounder on a long cast and I get that thing down to 10, I'm far closer, right? Mm-hmm. So augmenting your presentations as you move off of a point, right? Being ready for that. And then changing your presentation, but also being ready for that and having the confidence in three or four different baits, right? Because I'm not necessarily patterning the fish at this point. I'm sort of stream of conscious on this, trying to explain my methodology as best as possible. But I'm not necessarily going, I'm trying to find a fish. I'm going, this structure has fish. Conditions say that they are tight to structure. How do I get baits that fish this structure as it is laid out? Because the structure is the structure is the structure. Now we need to use our tools to get the job done. Do we have competency in all the tools that we need to get this job done? Right? And that's the way I'm sort of approaching it. If you need to, let's say we need to build whatever. We need to frickin', I'm trying to think of a great analogy, but we need to install a bolt, right? So I need a drill to make a hole for the bolt. I need a wrench to you know what I'm saying? I need a freaking wrench to hold the nut, and I need a freaking ratchet to turn the head. Now, if I don't have all three of those tools, my job's going to be far harder.
Sure.
That's the way you need to approach it. I need to effectively fish a point. I need to be competent with all of the tools necessary to do so to be effective through all stages. Back to the stupid analogy of drilling a hole and putting a bolt through it. If you don't have a drill, it's going to be really hard, right? If you don't have a ratchet, but you got one wrench, it's going to be really hard. You need to be competent in all stages. You know, it's a thing. I'm on my soapbox now. You watch a freaking Packers game. Sorry, Minnesotans. Or you watch a football game or whoever to be. You know, the coach comes to the press conference and says, we are effective in all three phases of the game. That's what it takes to win. I'm sounding preachy, I'm sorry, but that's a fact. And so you've got to be competent in all phases of that. Now, that could be said, too, about rubber baits. We've talked about rubber baits so much about their different running depths, but let's say we're fishing cover structure in combination, where I've seen it where, you know, I go from shallow dog over the shallow stuff to a regular dog to I'm throwing a friggin' pounder at the end of the thing, dependent on where I need to have running depth. Once I have an idea of the pattern, right? So we understand the pattern in some regard. We're not hunting for fish, but be competent on those things. And God, I know it's so soapboxy, folks. You know, something else that quickly that I go into the hump thing, right? Humps, my lovely humpy humps. Is and it's not that far from a point, a bar. You know, but humps that are really good are that immediate access to deep water, right? Just like we're saying, a point is going to have that access to that main base, and it's going to break off, you know, to something substantial. Humps are interesting in that regard as well. I personally believe that humps are sort of the safe space, if you will, the neutral zone. It's like, Jay, when you ever have like a safe, like you'd yell safe when you're playing tag or something.
Yeah, safe. No, I never have.
Jay's never played tag. Next time you're in the Muskie shop, just run up and tag Jay and then run away. Tag, you're it. And then leave the store, and Jay will always be it.
Yeah, I do that to Fred today.
Fred, but you know,
anyway,
you're playing tag and I'm safe, I got my home base. I think a humps is sort of like that it's home base for a lot of pelagic fish, right? You know, here's these fish, and there are suspendos, there are fish that live offshore. We fully believe that. You know, you can always catch open water trolling fish year round.
Sure.
And I think there's just fish that live that lifestyle, you know, especially Cisco based and all this stuff. But these humps, in interchangeable and a hump, I'll consider a hump and a reef in the same ballpark in a lot of regards. It's going to be like that structural element in open water that they can relate to when they need to or want to. You know, but a hump is going to have access to deeper water, you know, and it's going to be some kind of break line. There's humps on rivers, there's humps on streams. But I want that thing to break into the deeper water, and I want it to have some kind of flat structural element on the top, right?
Okay.
You don't want Mount Everest, per se. You don't want this big spire. So if you're looking at humps that are better than others, they're going to have – and now it's the same thing we're looking for food shelves on the edges. It will have some kind of flat ground. Right. And it doesn't have to be flat, but it'll plateau, if you will. Mm-hmm. So you'll have this zone that fish can sort of operate on or rest on. You know, it's going to help them provide like a food source, you know, and so you're going to encounter a lot of fish that move out of open water to this to feed, because bait fish will congregate to those things. And that's why I sort of call it safe and tag. You got a lot of open water fish that will end up there in certain points of the day. Right. So I'm not going to really focus a lot of time on humps that are A, too sharp, or they're just completely way too deep. You know, I want it to come up. I want it to be dramatic. And I'm going to grade those humps. Hump grader, the podcast.
Okay.
Jay, how would you grade your humps?
Well, I was just thinking about humps. It's like everyone's probably got a secret hump that they like to fish. And it's like, you ever notice that,
secret hump?
Anyway, I was saying every good hump always has one side that's good. You know, it's something to pay attention to next time you go out. It's just like, well, you know, take a few minutes and go around the thing with your electronics and really get a good look. And, you know, it'll kind of might open your eyes as to exactly why that side of the hump, you know, day in, day out is always a better producer.
Well, and it
ties in with structure, no doubt.
As a humping connoisseur, I can tell you.
And you are.
I'm a humping connoisseur. We might open this podcast with the Humpty Dance from Digital Underground.
No, please don't do that.
Anyway, the fishing humps, fishing reefs, and I know they're different, but for argument's sake, they look the same on the damn map. You know, access to deep water always, but differentiating with those humps, often at times it's going to be adjacent to more of your migratory routes too. Right. So if you have like a big feeding flat or sort of a dead zone, you know, here's this just vast flat, nothing, and it's 50 yards from this hump. That hump might be productive because of open water elements, but that hump needs to be relatively near something that's going to lead a muskie there from shoreline or inlands. Now, all bets are off Cisco-based stuff, right? But you want it to be adjacent. The same with your points, sort of in a complex. You'll hear about people say a complex of humps or a reef complex.
Yep, you hear that a lot.
Right. That's why I've always said, you take it to the bank, three humps are better than one. I want more humping than less humping, Jay.
Okay, sure.
You know, so if you get a couple of them together, you get three, you get four humps, you know, it's exponentially going to be a better area. It's sort of obvious. More is more when it comes to the, but as far as determining, it's like a spot on that, you know, a lot of times there'll be a rock or a weed patch or a submerged log, and you'll find, like, I'm talking a space that's like four casts wide that's just money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't get your cast in there, you're not catching a fish. But if you dime that thing, that's it. You know, with that being said, a lot of times with modern electronics, you can sort of like circle around or drive around one of these things and go, woo, there's something juicy over here if you don't know the spot. But, you know, sort of pay attention when you're fishing these submerged humps for where you see your activity come from. Because I really feel, you know, you'll hear a lot of conversation, Jay, about, you know, weed pockets. Or there's one spot on this weed bed that's better than the rest of this entire weed bed. You know, because there's a extra piece of cover or the structural element or something like that. There's going to be a spot on some of these humps. You get into larger humps, you can have a couple. But for some reason, humps to me are just like, you're going to have a money spot on those. Again, and it comes back to fishing these things, just like your points. The soapbox I got about is having the right tools. So, you know, if I've got a lake and there's not a lot of humps on it and I'm fishing it in winter and the muskies are holding deep, but there's this one hump that comes up to 12 feet and the rest of the stuff's 20 feet, you need to fish a bait that's effectively going to get down there, right? So, you know, the 12 feet down, we're talking rubber and we're talking about giving it the time to get there, right? If you're going to fish structure effectively consistently through the year, you need to get comfortable with the idea of making contact with it and fishing near it, right? There will be muskies suspended above. When I come in, I should say this, when I come into a point, you know, we're talking summer peak or the fish are hotter, conditions really good, you know, I'll definitely fish a bucktail or fish a glider or a minnow bait that runs high over the entire thing to pick up any suspended fish, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But after I've done that a couple times on a couple things, I'm right back to structure fishing. I'm going to follow it up with that. But to those tight fish, when we get into humps, you've got to get the bait down there. So if you got a shallow hump, you know, obviously, shallow raider, your freaking manta, your crane bait, and then back it off. I would say, especially in cold fronts, you will find some of these fish that are just sort of, it's just the way I view it. You'll find these open water fish, in my opinion, just sort of give up and go hang off a hump, right? So if you're driving around the lake and there's nothing going on and there's no suspended bait fish and nothing's happening, a lot of times fishing the deep edge right where that hump makes contact with the main basin can be pretty juicy because, you know, if you're an open water muskie, are you going to spend all day long chasing bait fish that are stuck on the bottom? No.
Right.
You need to be somewhere. You know, okay, so a lot of times you'll find big fish that are just like there. They're not active, but they're there. And you can juice them up by getting a bait down there. I think that's one way that big rubber really changed muskie fishing is like fishing reefs in Canada or fishing humps of just like, okay, the thing, I can sink it down there. I'm not trying to crank it down. You know, I can just sort of dime a cast on the top of this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And let it and count it down. Another thing that could be said, there's and it's the only time I use it anymore. There's a countdown depth rater, which is super weighted, but it runs. It's a straight model. And if you need to get it way down there, that bait's good because you have speed control. I've tried some baits that are, if you remember, like man's baits, Jay, back in the day, he was like 25 stretch and 30 stretch.
Yeah, the stretch and, 30 plus and all that. Yeah.
You know, it's got the lip the size of a freaking spatula.
Yeah, they were crazy.
You know, I need a hook on the lip because it's bigger than most of my baits, but, you know, it still took some speed to get up down there. So if you got deep humps, be thinking rubber. I think pretty much all year long on that because sure. I feel it, like I said. Could be wrong, and it's lake to lake, and everybody's experiences differ. User experiences may differ. But, you know, that's sort of that home base for those open water fish to come in and chill out, but we need to be effective in how we're presenting to them. But the same grading thing with those humps, like I said, just to reiterate that, looking at what's available in and around this hump, what makes it better, what can make it theoretically better than another. Goodness gracious, I mean, there's not enough time in the day here. Man-made structure. Right? Whoa. Man-made structure. Big.
Man-made structure.
Big, big, big thing. Right? That means dam faces, wing walls, right? There's a lot of lakes that have crap in them. Right? The one thing I can tell you, they're all going to be different, and this is not some sage-like advice, but goodness, sorry, my phone is just buzzing, guys. You know, and I would say overall you could hold on, stop texting, doing the podcast. Jesus. Guys, I got like 9 texts in a row. I got ADD today. We should look at, and I'll try to just get everything into one spot here. You have road beds in some places, especially on reservoirs where there used to be roads or literally timber trails, all kinds of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll have bridge pylons. You'll have all these elements. I love man-made structure because it is so different from its surroundings, right? If you're looking for something that is just different, and I'm not, let's get away from like the dam faces or the wing walls or anything right now. Let's just look at man-made structures in a basin or in a lake. It is completely unique in its own right. You've got a submerged roadbed. Whoa, right? Submerged roadbeds are going to be heat soaks for the winter, right? Concrete, asphalt, whatever it might be, it's going to retain heat just like rocks were. Now I've got it in spades. Right? And I've brought this up before. When I was fishing tiger muskies out in Washington State, there was an old tarmac. They flooded an airport. I found that tarmac. You want to talk about money? Here I'm in 50-some degree water, and I've got freaking asphalt down there. Woo! And I got a lot of asphalt.
Wow.
Okay.
Interesting.
So, these are man-made structures, but they are now part of the lake. They're not going away.
Right, right.
Not in our lifetime. You know, the same kids, old train trestle, old bridges, right? Now I'm starting to sound West Virginia and Southern here. You'll have places where there are old bridge pylons and that thing. That is a hump that ain't moving, baby, right? You've got this structural irregularity. These things become structure in the lake, and they're usually just so obtuse to everything else. So it is just a game changer in that regard. Now, a lot of times you'll see on a map, you'll see like road bed, right? And you might not see them up there as much, but there's a lot of guys going, I see it in Pennsylvania. I see it in Kentucky. I see it in West Virginia. You know, it will be pretty, it's graded. It's literally a road, but they have augmented the structure to the extent that you have now a flat. You got to think of these things in the form that they are, what that really looks like. So here's this really flat zone that just comes out of nowhere. Right now we have regular, it's graded, and we have breaks to the side of it and things of that nature. So a lot of these man-made structures are going to be a sore thumb in comparison to anything around them. And it's going to, they're all going to fish differently, but don't overlook those. Like I said, the bridge pylons approach those sort of like you would in the game that would be a hump, right? Now, are they going to use a lot of this stuff as a migratory route? I don't think so, but they're going to use it for feeding zones because you know, the same as a brush pile, Jay. Like, you know, somebody will take Christmas trees and put them on the ice and the ice breaks and you got a Christmas tree pile or, yep, you know, a brush pile. You're going to have that man-made crap because cover is cover is cover is cover, right? So when you start finding cover around these man-made structures, it's even better, obviously, but you're going to have really irregular stuff going on where you might have, I've seen bodies of water where, you know, Jay, that like they'll build up, you'll see it on like mine sites or anything. They'll build a road, right, through a ditch. Like, so you'll move in a bunch of earth and you'll elevate this road so you can get to one side or the other and all this stuff. And I've seen it where here's this wall underwater where it comes up and it's an old roadbed. So you've got brake lines that are insane, that are as steep as they get. And now the whole thing's underwater. Mm-hmm. So if you have those on your body of water that you're fishing, and not everyone does, but it's worth bringing up. It is a bling bling blue light special, blue light special. Come look at me. Come look at me. Mm-hmm. The same thing could be said as far as some of these man-made structures we get into. Again, I'll go back to like dams. You know, there are, obviously we know dams attract fish when it's dammed on a river, but you know, dissecting a dam as a whole other podcast, but looking at some of the irregularities, if you have a wing wall coming off a dam, that's essentially a bar. It's essentially a point, right? So you've got this big protrusion out. Now, it doesn't break in the deeper water necessarily in the same way, but you have this protrusion, right? You're going to have those irregularities. So you got the dam face and you have this thing coming off of it. Now, these fish are going to orient to that thing, this big, big wing wall coming off. So paying attention to those is the least worth doing, obviously. And the thing I'd say this, especially with the man-made structures, less of the dams and the wing walls, but anything that might be in your body of water is... You find that, like I said, in conjunction with cover, but if you find it adjacent from other stuff that looks good, it gets really juicy because you'll find a lot of times on stuff that's panfish based, some of those are just absolute just killers.
Hmm.
Just killers. I just can't say it enough. I'm trying to think. Yeah.
Do you find a lot of this stuff in your region? Because, again, we don't have a whole lot of that around where I live, but... is it on the map in detail? Is there more, you're apt to find this on your electronics? It's like a guide, you know, where it'll say, you know, roadbed on your map or really. Something like that. But okay.
I'll tell you, I own for most, any of the waters that I fish with regularity, I will see differences between my hummingbirds, my Navionics on my phone, Navionics on my desktop, and difference on a paper map.
Sure.
And so I want to, if I'm focused in on a body of water, or let's say we're going somewhere, Jay. Let's say me and you are going to go to Indiana, right?
Mm-hmm,
we talked about that before all the crap happened and travel got, you know, tough back years. But you look at, there's a lake there. I won't name it, but it's in Indiana, and we looked at it. And, you know, I started looking at that thing online, and then I actually ordered a paper map. And I went, whoa, different. And I noticed some things there, and it seems to me that I should preface this yet again. I have found different things from Lowrance to Hummingbird on what they have noted. So more information for me is way better than less information when it comes to my map work. Okay? If you really know the map of your lake, you're going to realize that there are things that are wrong.
Yep.
Okay.
We saw that a lot.
Wrong. Flat wrong.
No.
Now that sucks, but I'll tell you, there are things that are wrong. If you look at your, and for sure, I guarantee, I can't say this if like Lake Master or any of the chips that you buy, if you look at their box, I would almost guarantee there's probably some legal jargon on there about this is not for navigation or something. Right. Sure. Because you open some of these apps that have lake maps, they're like, this is not for navigation. You know, maybe the chips are. I'm sure there's something in there saying we're not responsible if you hit something that you didn't see. Because there are variances. I saw the guy one time, I won't name the company, he was on one of my bodies of water, and he was doing the scanning thing for it, Jay.
No kidding.
It looked like the best job on earth because he was out there driving donuts half the day. and I saw him carry a 12-pack to the trash can when he got out of the boat. I shit you not. I am not exaggerating. I was like, oh my God, I'm never buying a map from that company.
I no way.
Hand on the Bible, man. I was just like, this is ridiculous. And I stopped him because he had some weird equipment on his boat that I'd never seen before.
He's out there going, yeah, dude, he was paid for this. Can you believe it?
He was running the friggin' dog shit out of this thing, driving like a crazy person. And, you know, I stopped him. I was like, man, what are you doing? I said, you know, what's all the equipment for? He's like, oh, man, I scan it for blankety blank lake maps. And I was like, oh, you know, he's about, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. This guy's about half cock drunk, you know? I was like,
you're like, oh, thanks for letting me know, because I just switched brands.
Yeah, I'm definitely not using that again. But with that being said, compare your maps.
Yeah.
Compare your maps. The smaller the body of the water, the less fishing pressure, the less tourist pressure there is, the less detailed map you're going to have. So compare. If you got a body of water you love, get a paper map. I'm telling you, you're going to see differences because each company is going to have a little bit different detail or a little bit different read. It is not a street map. It is not something that is set in stone where you go, this is it. There's going to be discrepancies. I've found a lot of spots, especially good Canada. Everybody that fishes Canada knows what I'm talking about. They're, half the crap's not on there. If you're going off some of these maps, you're going to wreck your boat, A, and then, you know, it's going to be wrong. So make sure you're comparing and contrasting and doing that map study. I would say this because, again, we'll have to do structure talk 3, I'm sure, because we're already running here long and I got to get up in the morning. Channels. Right? Okay. I could do a whole hour on channels, but here we go.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it. Channels are, if it's present, it's an end all be all, right?
If it's present.
Now, okay. If you're on, you know, whatever lake, Jimmy Lake, and it's a little bowl, might not be there. I will say this. There are not many bodies of water that I've seen that don't have a creek or something coming in or out of them. Okay. The introduction of water into any body of water, there is going to be something going on there structurally. It might be minute, right? It might be a creek that comes in and it literally just creates a singular spot. And I've seen that where there's like runoff creeks. And it's eroded a hole where it meets the body. You know, here it's coming in, and it's digging a hole. It's pump water into the lake forever. And it's a 5-cast spot or a 3-cast spot, right?
Yeah,
But they're money. They are money. You can hit them and you can catch fish. But when it comes to a channel, I'm really looking for, especially in lakes, that. If you find original creek channels or pass-throughs, there's one lake, the lake that was renamed, Jay, we'll leave it that, right? The lake that was renamed.
I know what you're talking about.
If you go to that, there is a rocky bar that is money. That's the one. That's the spot everybody knows and everybody fishes. And if you can't catch a fish there, you're in trouble. Well, what's adjacent to that? A big influx, a big creek mouth.
Yep.
Coming right into that thing. And there is current present right over that. Why do you think that the fish are there? Because it is the culmination of a lot of stuff. Right across the way, there's another point that produces 1/16 the amount of fish. To the untrained eye, they should be the same. But here's this structure coming out. So you got a structural element that has cover on it. That it has current on it. Woo. Tell me more, right?
It's a triple whammy.
Triple whammy. So most of these lakes, there's going to be something. There's going to be some kind of creek bed, even if it's minute. If you don't have a lot of them, find the ones that you have because they're going to be important. On some of your reservoirs, when they flooded these things out, there were, and a reservoir is essentially, not essentially, but it is, it's a flooded river. Right. Well, a lot of rivers are fed by creeks. Those creek beds are there. They're there. Now, they just flooded over top of them, but they're still full of water. And so you have, it might be 3 feet across, it might be 15 feet across, but identifying those elements is going to give you a lot of information, because let's look at a cove or a bay on a reservoir, right?
Mm-hmm.
The money spots, the spots you need to be looking at are going to be connected to creek channels or the old creek beds, because that provides a route, a migratory route, a transitioning route from the channel. So the channel's the superhighway, right? Everything starts and stops at the channel. That's how they get up and down a reservoir, the main channel, right? Where the river used to be.
And then the interstate system.
The interstate. And now we got the freaking county roads. Right? So they're going to get off the highway. They're going to get off the interstate. They're going to get on County Road B, and they're going to follow County Road B into this cove. Right? Because the bait fish are doing it, and everybody else is going to do it. So there's usually a channel present in just about anything. Right? If it's got connecting waterways, there's some kind of channel there. What you got to do is you have to present to those, just like I said earlier when we were talking about points. You're going to have to get baits that are going to work those effectively, right? When I see channels in open water or in bays, that's a trolling opportunity, right? A lot of times they're part of the basin. It's rare are you going to see a channel on the side of a body of water, right? You might see it like with a sharp drop or an edge, but, you know, bowl shape or something of that nature. So we're talking usually deeper water, because when this thing flooded out or water was added to it, because, I mean, Jay, there's a lake, again, right down the road from where you're at, I'm thinking about, that has a channel in and out of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one with the big weed void. Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm talking about? That one. And so there's channel, there's their current right there, and the reason that's a hot spot is because the channel runs right there. But if we're deeper than, you know, 10 feet, we need to be thinking trolling. So a lot of times fishing your channels is going to be effective trolling, whether winter, spring, summer, fall, and finding transitioning fish. Now, a channel becomes far more important to me as a structural fishing element in cold fronts or in transitional periods, right? If I start out my morning, and let's say we just had a cold front drop in on us, Jay, and so we're on this lake, and there's one main channel and one creek that connects to that channel, and that's it, right? Really, really basic. And we're out on the lake last night before this cold front hit, man, and it was good, and we were seeing fish, and now it's just a dead zone. That's when I'm going to go and start that midday trolling pass and get down that channel, because they've got to go somewhere, right? They're going to drop down. Now I'm going to work my points. I'm going to work my structure, but that might be my last stop, those deep submerged channels, because you go, if they're on the bottom, if they are out there in the nastiest, crappiest, the worst conditions possible, where would they be? Are they going to arbitrarily lay on mud on the bottom, or are they going to find something structural that they can move against and move around the lake?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's sort of the last stop. That is the now there's patterns, and everybody will have some people have a pattern. It's like, I'm doing this, 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 and this. But if I'm trying to source out a bite, that's the last stop on the game plan. But it can be super productive. But knowing that they're there, you know, paying attention to that stuff and how it's affecting things. The same thing could be said from a channel, and it's, you know, it's almost like it's similar to like neck downs. I know neck downs are, you know, where the tightening of water, right? But, you know, the way you're going to fish in and around that, you know, you'll see like in a neck down, it's got the curve and it's got a structure. A lot of good neck downs will have like a turn in them, right? Structural element in that thing. Well, if I can find the channel where it's got a curve in it, like a neck down, where that channel runs near the end of that bar we were talking about, right, Jay?
Yeah, right.
Well, I can't find them shallow, and I can't find them at the end of this board. Maybe I need to move back out because we got a wicked cold front and things are real bad. Now I'm going to move out into that channel, and I'm going to start at that bar, and I'm going to troll up and down that channel and work my baits along that channel, right? I'm going to focus still around my elements, and that's sort of the last pass, because I can tell you they're not in the woods,
Mm-hmm.
In bad conditions, they did not crawl to the lake and say, we're going to stay at the Motel 6 until things straighten out. You know? Muskies don't have credit cards that I'm aware of. They can't, you know, get out of there and get a room. So they got to be somewhere. You know, with that being said, you know, a fair point of just in the spirit of being pragmatic, you know, if my gut's saying, hey, they're holding tight and things are bad and bait's down low, you know, a multi-line state, I might run a couple deep and one shallow just in case there's a suspendo acting stupid, right? But following those original channels are going to be the last stop. If you can't get him there, if you've effectively fished the littoral zone, you've effectively fished down your structure, we need to go open water and channels. If you can't get him there, go home. You know? Go play checkers. Anyway, goodness gracious. Jay, I think we've covered a lot of the questions. I've been saving a lot of the structural questions.
Yeah, there's a lot of people responding to the first one. Yeah. You did a great job.
We'll keep pounding on this, guys. It's a little dense in information at times.
A little bit at a time.
We'll hit it again. Anyway, next week, guys, we've got some bait giveaways coming up. Ooh.
All right.
And some
stuff. Love it.
Everybody loves that, guys. Anyway, we'll catch you next week. Good night, G-Bird.
Good night, Steve.
Later.